Hello, Malcolm here, and welcome to Tuesday Teaching Tips. And today, we're talking about the difference between using our imagination in a helpful way, as opposed to speculating about parts of a passage you might be teaching, where the detail is not there, in a way that's less than helpful, it might be distracting. What's the difference between helpful imagination and unhelpful speculation? I think this is very important because we need to use our imagination. Now, the idea for this has come from, because I got a question. A question from my friend Johnson in India. Hi, Johnson. Love to you and your family. Thanks for sending me the question. And by the way, if you have questions, anything to do with the Bible or preaching and teaching, do send them my way. malcolm@malcolmcox.org is the email address to use. And he sent me a question because somebody had asked him a question about what happened during the childhood of Jesus, or particularly between the age of 12 and 30. What was going on in those times? And he asked me if I had a video or something on it, and I don't. So today what I'd like to do is answer that question, but also use it as a way to explore what is the useful and less than useful way to use our imagination and do some speculating. So that's what we're going to look at here today. So first of all, let's deal with the actual question. I suppose the simple answer, between the ages of 12 and 30, we really have no idea. We have no idea what Jesus was doing in any sense of detail. The Bible doesn't give us any record. We do see Jesus in the temple at the age of 12. It says this in Luke 2, 42. When he was 12 years old, he went up to the festival according to the custom. After it was over, his parents were returning home. The boy stayed behind. They were unaware of it. They began looking for him. They didn't find him. They went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. So he was doing that at the age of 12. We do know that at that point. And then we know that at the age of 30, he started his public ministry. In Luke 3, verse 23, it says, "Now Jesus himself was about 30 years old when he began his ministry." So we have an incident from him at the age of 12, and we have an incident at the age of 30, and absolutely nothing in between. Now, why 30? The Tyndale commentary on this passage says this: "This was the age when the Levites began their service." If you have a look in Numbers chapter 4, verse 47, "and was evidently regarded as the age at which a man was fully mature." Thus, it looks like he didn't begin that public ministry until he perhaps not only knew himself he was ready for it, but he knew the world would accept that he was mature enough to start a public ministry. Now, what happened in between 12 and 30, those 18 years, completely unrecorded. According to the movie The Passion of the Christ, I think Jesus invented the table, or the chair, was it? I forget, I have to go back and look at the movie again. Apparently he invented some kind of carpentry furniture. I'm not sure about that. There are some apocryphal so-called gospels that give us so-called details about his childhood, that he turned lumps of clay into birds that flew off and a few other things. There's no evidence that those incidents happened or that they're an accurate record of incidents. Those apocryphal gospels were written much later than the other documents we have for the New Testament, and they don't add anything. It's just speculative in a way that is not useful for anything. But what do we know? We know just a small amount by looking at Luke chapter 2. Verses 51 to 52, it says this: "He went down to Nazareth after the incident in the temple. He went down to Nazareth with them, with his parents, and was obedient to them. And his mother treasured all these things in her heart, and Jesus grew." This much we know: he grew. He grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. No detail. But we know he was obedient to his parents. He grew in wisdom. He grew in stature, which could mean character as well as physically, and in favor with both God and the people around him. We know that. And I would say, surely that's all that matters. We know about his miraculous birth. We know a few details about his childhood, his early childhood. We know that he was devoted to the word even at the age of 12. And we know that he was ready to begin his ministry at the age of 30, and it is his public ministry, along with his incarnation, that really matter. In John chapter 20, we should bear this in mind. Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. So if everything Jesus did in his adult life did not need to be recorded, then how much more extra details of his childhood and early adulthood also do not need to be recorded? The Bible is long enough, isn't it? It contains all we need. According to John 21, verse 25, Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for the books that would be written. And that must be true. So my answer to what happened during those years between the ages of 12 and 30 is this, is that he was obedient to his parents and he grew in wisdom and stature in the favor of God and of people. And that prepared him to begin his public ministry at the age of 30. That's what I think was going on. Now, if the further question is why we don't have more detail about those years between 12 and 30, the answer is simply that it's not necessary for us to know the information, to be able to trust that he's the Messiah, which is the key point, and that he can bring us the life, the new life that we need. We don't need that information to trust him as Messiah. That's the key. Now, on to the wider point of the difference between using our imagination as opposed to making unhelpful speculation when we preach and teach. Let's see what we can discern from this. Now, I think it's vital that we as preachers and teachers use our imagination when we're engaging with the biblical text. We've got to use the imagination. God has given us our imagination. We should certainly use it. And when you look at the prophets and teachers of even in the Bible, we can see that they use their imagination as they use ideas and lessons from their own life and around them in nature to spice up their talks, to illustrate them and to make them meaningful. So using the imagination is a fine thing and should be done by preachers and teachers. There's nothing more dull than listening to someone simply repeat what's in here without adding anything that's personal and meaningful. So we need to engage our imagination. If we don't, we'll find it difficult to enter the context of the writer as he wrote what he wrote, the people he's writing about or writing to, what's going on in the passage. We won't engage deeply enough with the text, let alone be able to bring it to other people. So imagination for the preacher and teacher begins by studying the text as we prepare our lesson, but then also in the way that we deliver. God gave us this imagination, let's use it. I'll give you one example. Recently I preached on Acts chapter 14 and on the courage of Paul and Barnabas, because after they finish their first missionary journey, they finish up in Derbe, then they go back through the previous towns they've been in, strengthening the churches. In chapter 14 it says they returned to Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch, strengthening the disciples, encouraging them to remain true to the faith. We must go through many hardships. They appoint elders and they carry on until they get back to Syrian Antioch. The courage of Paul and Barnabas is astonishing here, and I used my imagination to think about, they've just been in all these places, minds have been poisoned against them, people are plotted against their life, and in Lystra, the first place they go back to, that's the place where the Apostle Paul was stoned and left for dead. Can you imagine, if you use our imagination, can you imagine what it might have been like for Paul and Barnabas to think, where should we go next after Derbe? Let's go back, first of all, to the place where Paul was stoned. Can you imagine the courage of Paul? Can you imagine perhaps the courage of Barnabas thinking, it was Paul's turn last time, might be my turn this time? Can you imagine them walking up the road, perhaps on a donkey, approaching the gates of the city of Lystra and thinking, I wonder what's going to happen this time? Can you imagine that? Now, in imagining that, I find that helpful because it puts me in, to some extent, the shoes, sandals of Paul and Barnabas, and hopefully engage with what it might have been like. And that's good. I think that's helpful. But I need to make sure that I'm expressing when I teach this that I am telling people what I'm imagining that they were experiencing, because the Bible doesn't say how they felt. I can only say if it was me, I think I'd have been thinking this. I'd have been feeling that. And that's fine because it helps me to engage with the text and hopefully it helps my audience engage with what's really going on here. To simply state they were terrified would be unhelpful and inaccurate, because the Bible doesn't say they were terrified. I'd be adding something to the text. The danger of that is an astute listener will hear you say that and think, hang on, it doesn't say that. And if you're making a big point out of it, they could legitimately say, well, that's not in there. Why should I listen to anything you say? And we lose the trust of those to whom we're speaking. And the other issue is that what we say is likely to be repeated. As people hear what we say, they were terrified. They'll go off and tell their friends, you know, Paul and Barnabas, they were terrified. Well, they might have been. I think they almost certainly were. But it needs to be my expression of my imagination in this regard, rather than saying something that this text does not actually say. Using our imagination to speculate and to guess isn't wrong. But it would be wrong to give the impression that our speculation, our imagination, our guesswork are a true and definite interpretation of something about the which the Bible does not give us specific details. We don't need elaborate caveats each time we use our imagination. We don't need to say, I'm only using my imagination here, I'm speculating, possibly guessing, you don't need to take anything I'm saying seriously. I don't think that's helpful. That's not how we have conversations with each other. And public speaking is primarily conversation rather than declaration, in my opinion. But that's another teaching tip which I've done before. Instead, simple short phrases like, the way I see it, or it looks to me like, or something like, I wonder if, a few more, perhaps it was like this, or if it was me, I'd be thinking, or if it was me, I'd be thinking, or I'd be feeling. And one last one, I'm only speculating, but, or I'm only guessing, but. Short phrases like this signal to the congregation that you're using your imagination, you're actually encouraging them to use their imagination, but it is imagination and speculation, reasonable imagination, reasonable speculation, hopefully, but it is yours and it's not in the text. You may say I'm nitpicking here, perhaps, but on the other hand, it's honest. And to be honest as a speaker is a good thing, isn't it? So to go back to what Johnson asked me about the life of Jesus between the ages of 12 and 30, if I was preaching on the incident in the temple when Jesus was 12, I might say something like this. Try this on for size. I'm guessing that during those years, after he's left the temple, when he goes back to be with his parents, and during those years, I'm guessing he was reading the Torah. How else would anyone grow in wisdom? It says he grew in wisdom. It looks to me like humility was a key part of his character as he grew up during those years, because how else can you grow in favor with God and other people unless you have a learning spirit? And that's a humble spirit, isn't it? It looks to me like humility is a key. Looks like the Torah must have been a very important priority to him during those years. So I'm telling you that I'm speculating. I'm telling you that I'm guessing. I think they're reasonable because they're based on some things that the text actually does say. But I'm making it clear that these are my ideas. And that's about the most we can say. Honestly, I probably wouldn't bother to even say it if I was preaching on this passage. But if I was to do so, I'd make it clear that I was speculating. So, question for you. What do you think is the value of using your imagination as a preacher and teacher? And then what is the danger? What do you see as the advantages and the disadvantages of using your imagination, guesswork, speculation? How do we know when we're imagining and using our imagination in a way that's helpful? And how do we know when we're using our imagination in a way that can be distracting and unhelpful for the people we're speaking to? So I would love to know what you think. Please drop me a line. You can email me, malcolm@malcolmcox.org, or you can leave a comment, my preference, wherever you hear or see this recording. Just drop a comment into the comment box, because then we can learn from each other. And we learn best when we're learning in community. If you have a friend who you think would find this interesting and useful, pass the link on to them, let them know. If you're listening to the podcast, please drop a review into wherever you get your podcast from. That would be so helpful. If you'd like my free ebook, How God Grows His People, then sign up for my newsletter at my website, malcolmcox.org. And if you do, I'll send you my weekly newsletter, with everything I've been doing in the last few, 7 days, and you'll get that ebook as well. And I just thank you so much for participating and listening and for your comments. And I want to thank Johnson again for your question. I hope that was helpful. Let me know what you think and send me any other questions you have, and I'll do my best to answer them. Not just the specific question perhaps, but the broader principle behind how we deal with these things as preachers and teachers of God's word, which is such a privilege. And let me encourage you, if you're preparing a lesson right now of some kind, I encourage you to see it as a privilege. I'm preparing a lesson on the Holy Spirit this week, and I'm struggling with it, not because I don't want to do it, and not because it's not good material, and I have a lot of good material, but it's just that I want to get it right. I want to do the best I can on God's behalf, for the sake of the people to whom I will be speaking. So as we struggle together with these lessons, and we struggle together with presentation, with preparation, let's help each other and encourage each other by commenting, leaving ideas, and then we can do our best to be the most effective speakers we can be for God. Thanks again. I hope you have a terrific Tuesday and a wonderful week. Take care and God bless.